Time now to consult with our resident ethicist, Randy Cohen. Randy writes the ethicist column for the New York Times magazine, and he's here to help us start the new year with as much ethical correctness as we can manage. Hi, Randy.
Hi, Brian. Nice to see you.
Good
in the sense of not seeing you, I guess.
It's good to chat with you. Our listener today, Lisa, is from Hartford, Connecticut. She asked us not to use her real name. She writes, I'm a manager at a major U.S. corporation. An employee approached me about overtime we require her and her peers to work. She couldn't afford to lose her job, but she couldn't work overtime without leaving her son on his own. She said the State Department of Social Services was watching her because her son had told teachers that he was being left alone for part of the evening. Should I make an exception for her? Our attendance policy is quite strict. Do I trust the employee who knows her son and her family's needs best to make her own decision? How do I know that she's telling the truth? I'd be very glad of some help with this situation. So far, I've responded with analysis paralysis. So, Randy, what should Lisa do in this situation?
Well, I can certainly understand her paralysis. I'm amazed she didn't actually burst into flames, that her bosses have put her and the employee in what I think is an impossible position. As I understand it, I, a non-lawyer, the company does have the legal right to force employees to work overtime in most cases, but I don't believe it has the moral right to compel overtime. I don't believe any employer has that right. Where that leaves Lisa is in a very awkward position, that it's nearly impossible to find an individual solution when the problem is an entire unjust system, as it is at her workplace, I think. So what's required here is not so much personal virtue as company-wide reform, and I think that's what she should work for. I recognize this is advice to seek reform, and it doesn't help her at that moment, but that really is what I think is ethically called for here. Mm-hmm.
So what do you think, though, that Lisa should tell her employee who comes to her with this dilemma?
It's impossible. There is no right answer. I think, unfortunately, in many situations, there is no ethical right answer. And by seeing the question only as one of individual virtue, of making an individual correct choice, it's impossible. No wonder she's paralyzed. I'm barely moving at all.
We have Lisa on the line now. Hi, Lisa.
Hi.
So, what did you think of Randy's advice?
Well, now I don't feel so badly about not coming to a decision.
Have you taken any action on your own?
Basically, what I've tried to do with this type of situation, and this one in particular, is to just be as consistent as possible and use some flexibility when we can. But the biggest thing is not to make exceptions for some people and not for others, because that leads to a whole nother range of problems.
Mm-hmm. It certainly does. That I checked with someone at the EEOC, the Equal mm-hmm. Employment Opportunities Commission, and also at a wonderful place called the D.C. Employment Justice Center, and they both referred me to the Fair Labor Standards Act. Again, I'm not a lawyer, but as I understand it, if you, say, make exceptions for all parents, that could be seen as discriminatory. It could be seen as gender discrimination, since quite unfairly, in my view, these burdens fall on women much more often, and men have been known to make legal complaints about this.
Right.
So that the task of creating consistent policies for exceptions is a really hard one, and I don't trivialize that at all. But I think unless your company helps you out here, and unless you make them help you out, really urge them to help you out, boy, you're in a bad position, aren't you?
Well, I like your advice. I think it's good.
I'm just wondering, Lisa, are you in a position to talk with your supervisors or other folks in management there to ask them if they might have an overtime policy that's more sort of voluntary?
I can certainly lobby for changes in the way that Randy described, and I think I will definitely do that. But I also think even if I'm not successful, at least I'll feel better having done something like that.
So, but after all of this, Randy, I get the sense that you feel that maybe Lisa is really powerless in this particular dilemma in terms of offering advice to her employee.
I do, and that's often the truly sad thing, or encouraging, depending on if you're a less gloomy person than I am, that so many of the people I think who call this show looking for ethical advice or write to me at the paper really want to do the right thing. are well-meaning. They've analyzed the situation, I thought, with real insight. But there's very little they can do if they only see it as an individual problem. That sometimes what's really at issue is an unjust system, and the only meaningful solution is to change that system. So that's why I've come more and more to approach these questions as matters of civic virtue rather than just individual rectitude. It's very frustrating, I think, sometimes for the listeners or for the people who write to me that they would like me to have a solution. Well, what can she do tomorrow when she gets to work? Maybe not much in relationship to that employee, but I think a great deal in relationship to her bosses.
Well, Lisa, thanks very much for doing this with us. I think it was sparked a real interesting conversation.
Well, thank you.
If you have a question for the ethicist, drop us a line at watc@npr.org. Put the word ethics in the subject line, and please include a phone number where we can reach you. Randy Cohen, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you, Brian.